All right, part two. Go. If for some reason someone doesn't listen to part one, they listen to part two, it's Tommy and Todd.
Hi.
Tommy Truman and Todd Bagley.
Todd Bagley. We're both here together. We're both geeking out about depression and such.
It's so awesome. Exciting. It's exciting. Okay, well, I want to kind of talk about, I don't know how to start this, but I really want you to kind of go in with that analogy you talked about the other day.
Twinkie?
Or not the other day, yesterday. Yeah, the Twinkie analogy.
Okay.
Kind of, if you can, just frame what we're talking about and then go in with that.
All right. So, I mean, this applies to both Tommy and I. You talked about how your parents struggling to see exactly how you're feeling and why you would be more negative than usual. And this is a human experience. This just kind of really dumbs it down. And the scenario I'll have written out in my next podcast, I'll actually probably do it a bit better, but I'm making this assessment of a child who has ADD. It's actually a real life situation, with maybe a slight name change, but that, so imagine a mom who's got, sorry, I'm going to back up. So it's basically just assessing life subjectively, which is difficult. We have this tendency to just assess because it's practical. Look at as if everybody's
having the same experience as us.
Same experience as us and as everybody else in the room.
Okay. Right? So I'm just going to try to make it clear for myself. So the tendency that we have as human beings to take our experience and project it on others and then judge them because of it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So imagine you have a mom or a dad. You have a I'm going to go with mom because it's my mom.
Yeah.
Mom and four kids. Mom's out and she's decided she's got to do some laundry. So she's in changing up the laundry and these four siblings are sitting in the room and consider their brain biochemistry, right? And this is not something that goes through our thought process when we're considering these things, but this is this is how things really kind of play out. So these four kids are hanging out. They decide they want a treat. Now, three of the kids, their brain reacts to the same level of dopamine as it should. So let's say for 100 units of dopamine, their brain gets 100 units of pleasure. The fourth child, we'll call him Ted. So Ted's brain, when he gets 200 or when he gets 100 units of dopamine, his experience of pleasure is only 50 units. So okay. 2-to-1 ratio.
Okay. Right?
So then
rather than a 1-to-1.
Correct.
Okay.
So in the refrigerator, there are apples and apples give all of the kids release within all the kids' brains when they're eating 100 units of dopamine.
And 100 units of pleasure because of that.
So 100 units of pleasure to the three.
Right to them. But we're talking about the first kids.
Correct. Yeah. So on top of the refrigerator, there are Twinkies. And Twinkies release 200 units of dopamine into the brains of each child.
Okay.
So when you're sitting there weighing this scenario, the three kids can eat an apple and get the same amount of pleasure that the fourth kid can only get by eating a Twinkie.
Okay.
And this isn't exactly how the science of it works out, but it's just good numerically to kind of see.
Right.
Things are different.
Right. You get the point.
Right. So that they all invest their energy and they are all experiencing the same amount of pleasure. And then what happens when mom comes in from doing the laundry?
So the all four kids or say all four kids have the apple, right? Everyone gets 100 or the first three get 100 pleasure units. The fourth one gets 50.
Correct. Or he realizes that he would only get 50 pleasure units from the apple.
Okay.
And in thinking, I want as many pleasure units as my siblings are getting, it just makes sense for him to climb on top of the refrigerator and get the Twinkie.
Okay.
So that when mom runs into the room and she sees that three of her kids are eating apples and one of her kids is eating a Twinkie, she's like, what the hell, Todd? But that only makes sense because how else can you immediately do that? The transaction, the calculation of math in your brain to be able to accommodate for Todd's dopamine deficiencies,
right?
Compared to the other three,
right? And in a really real world sense, that's exactly what I feel like we go through. Is like we look at all these people and like they're like going through the gospel and they had these relationships, like these healthy, good relationships. And we're like, why are they so happy? Mm-hmm. Is that how you, yes. I mean, that's how yeah. you feel?
I
feel
absolutely. Like,
all the time.
Right. And it makes it easier for like my mom on a spiritual point to have a similar scenario where she would look at three kids and then her fourth me being like, why can you not grasp onto the joy of this? Like your other three siblings can.
Right.
I mean, that's a statement that we all make about kids as parents, just in general. Like, why can't you be more like this person?
Right.
Like, this is the real reason as to why.
Right.
But you're never thinking, what's the biochemical differential between my children?
Right.
You do to a certain extent, but there's no way to exactly do that. Plus, in that moment, when you're coming into that room and you see the Twinkie and then the three apples, how then, even if you were to do the math, how could you justify it explaining to those siblings the differential?
Right.
In that moment.
Well, man, that just made me think. So it's super hard as a parent. I mean, just from seeing what my parents have done is like, because then, you know, your parents try to compensate for you if they, I think my parents, one of their like superpowers is they're very humble and like open-minded. Like I've seen some parents that struggle with kids and depression. They're just like, no, you're faking it. You're
yes.
faking it. You're
yes.
faking it. So I have like so much appreciation for my parents. And so they're very, very, like they change and they adapt very well.
Yes.
But that also brings in another problem. Cause then there starts to be this sort of like resentment from the siblings and,
absolutely.
And trying, and then they can even become rebellious because it's like, well, why isn't Tommy cleaning the dishes? Why isn't Tommy? And they're like, exactly what you said. It's like, what are we going to explain to them? Like they're little kids. Like, yeah, Tommy. He's different.
Right. Well, yeah, no, he's not. Look, I mean, he looks like I do.
Right.
He smells like I do.
Right.
Right. I mean, to try and explain that to
Tommy was just happy yesterday. Like he was like fine.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
It is not a mathematical scenario. It's us trying to socialize a mathematical scenario, and it's very, very difficult.
Right. But I love that analogy because it is so, it just makes it so simple to understand.
Yeah.
I mean, not like that's the real math or that makes it, I mean, there's nothing to do with like real science mm-hmm. in that analogy, but you just see like, okay, one person can do something and the other person can do the same thing and they can feel totally different based on their chemical imbalances or whatever.
Absolutely. Like just that is fascinating about life. Just how we can all have completely different experiences doing the exact same thing.
Right. And it's funny. Like if you think that like you're super compassionate and you don't judge people, you're wrong. Here's what you do. Here's what I think people do. And this is what I've realized in my own life. You are compassionate where you struggle. And then you judge where you don't struggle. I mean, maybe subconsciously, or maybe you're better at it or you're not, but like, I see it all the time in myself, which was kind of frightening is like someone has depression. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
I am so, so sorry, but someone's rude and grew up in a broken family. I'm like, you jerk, you know, it's, and so I think like we have to be
generally, yes,
we have to be careful about like thinking we're compassionate. You may be, but you're probably compassionate of yourself.
Yes.
And I think that's why we need so many different people, because even if you're non-judgmental, it's still hard to be compassionate when you have no idea what someone's going through. So
correct.
Non-judgmental and compassionate are very different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of went off on a tangent there, but you know what I mean?
No, that is a great assessment in that. And I like how you made the point that something to the extent that like we have to have these different kind of people, right?
Right.
You have to have people that will act and be compassionate one way and not compassionate in another, because how else does the world go? How else does God get this job of the world done unless we have people who are boisterous and loud and sometimes rude? While the others of us play a completely different role. This is Shakespeare, right? All the world's a stage.
Sure. I've never heard that, but I'm sure he said that.
In that, I mean, if it is a stage, there's specific roles that have to be played.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have different individuals playing the role of the villain, of the savior, mm-hmm. of the best friend, And to a certain extent, to be able to make progress, that opposition is absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm. So something I would like to know is, I guess, you being a parent, well, a few things. How do you help your kids understand your specific struggles?
Mm-hmm.
And then how do you parent your like probably vastly different children or like very different children. And without, with, I mean, to the best of your ability, without creating some sort of void of, oh, Todd loves this kid more because he's more patient with him, or he doesn't have as high standards, or whatever it is.
Yes. I probably do it very poorly. What, as far as trying to communicate where I am at with my kids from the very get go, especially once I went to that dark place of treatment resistant depression, it was communicating, hey guys, this is just, I wasn't giving details of like what's going through my brain, but I can't, I'm sorry, I have no energy. And they, in seeing how my body was acting, they could generally understand. And over time, they actually adapted to be able to understand me, and not only understand myself, but understand each other better. Mm-hmm. In that mathematical, like social equation in their brains was built up more to be able to accommodate social or mental illness than it possibly could be in other things. Right. Mm. So social cues are a big thing. My kids probably picked a lot up on social cues that had to do with my own emotional illness, and then were able to see that within each other and actually apply that even to their friends, that more other kids, that other kids in different situations probably would miss out on. So, mm-hmm. So they probably learned from that. As far as working with my own kids from my own position, I definitely have some kids who are more driven and A-type personality. I definitely have some kids who are less driven, more creative. And usually there is some association with the creativeness and a more depressed emotion, mm-hmm. A dysthymia type of a thing.
Right.
But that it is, it's a hybrid. It's a complete hybrid, because when you're sitting there with your kids, and if you're working with them as a group, there definitely is this sense of, okay, I got to treat you all the same,
right,
generally.
Right.
You're all
in front of each other.
In front of each other. Yes. So that as far as your mathematical computation, when it comes down to it, you're all getting apples. I'm giving you apples, and I'm not giving anybody a Twinkie.
Right.
Okay. If there arises a situation where emotionally, like a dopamine hit for a Twinkie is needed, usually there's some visual answer to it that everybody else can kind of see. And there can be then a verbal cue where I'm like, okay, sorry, the other three of you, I've got to back off here and give a little bit more attention here. Mm-hmm. And my kids, knowing that I have a certain understanding with emotional tendencies like that.
Right.
They can understand where I would specifically back off and go talk to that child in that scenario. And that child will actually react better to me than they would even my wife, because they know that I can empathize.
I love that, because that's like the perfect answer. And I think it makes me think of, so we were having a family discussion. There were some disagreements on, let's see how I say this. There were some, we had some political, or my family was talking about some political things, and what? We had some like disagreements on mostly my mom and dad, just like how they would handle a certain situation. Mm-hmm. And I realized, like, as I saw them talking about it and discussing it, that they were talking about two different things. Like my dad was talking about some sort of like upholding of standard. Mm-hmm. And my mom was talking about working with the individual, right? And so we had this cool experience where we kind of started picking apart and realizing that they weren't really disagreeing. They were just talking about two different things. Mm-hmm. And I hope that my parents would probably be cool with me saying that. But I feel like my mom would be like, why did you start talking about me? Probably not. But
no, that's a great
my
example.
Dad said something interesting. He said, and that's exactly what Christ did, right? Like Christ was the strictest of the strict in upholding the law. Mm-hmm. But on an individual level, it was all compassion. And so I think like you're onto something when you say like in the group, I have to uphold the standard. Like you can't lower the standard, because that can really hurt the family and, yes. and whatever, but on the individual level, like that's where you can really show your compassion. And that's exactly how Christ did it.
Yeah. When you're talking about macro and micro economics on a social level.
I don't know what that is.
So
it sounds really
smart. So macro meaning big, micro meaning small, and economics meaning like how money is run. And this is a very political thing. So that's, one thought process is like, just take all the money from the rich and give it all to the poor.
Right.
And that will just solve everything. And that's an extremist statement there. Whereas the other one is the other extreme statement is the poor just don't know what they're doing. And so what they need is just a good kick in the butt to be right. able to raise themselves up.
Right. Okay.
And then there's a spectrum all between that whole area. But one is very much like, that's a very macroeconomic. You're looking at it very just like this general type of people are exactly like this, and this is what they need. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you look at that on an individual level, and again, politics comes up with this. If you're looking at two people who are applying for the same college, right? And there's this macroeconomics idea of affirmative action where you're saying, okay, this group of people here are generally more oppressed. And so if somebody in this group actually applies and has the same rating as another person in a favored group, you'll take the oppressed person in the group. The problem being is that like you can never really match everything up mathematically right, with that. Right. So that you could have somebody who you could be making a big mistake if you looked at it on an individual level.
Right.
As opposed to like breaking it up into
right. And you might groups. Look at two people that are poor and one's lazy and one's just like had a sucky
yes,
situation.
Correct.
And you can't, you know, they may be in the exact same economic status, but for totally different reasons.
Correct.
And so I think that's when principles become so important of hard work, right? Also compassion, right? Like these,
yes.
this is, you have to ride the principles and uphold the principles and then go on the individual level.
Yes.
And that's great. And I think that, that's a great way to parent, right? Mm-hmm. It's principles and upholding it like fairly strictly, like in the sense that your kids know what you expect. Mm-hmm. But then when you're compassionate, despite them breaking the laws, that's where the loyalty is built. I feel like,
yes,
you know, you break something that, you know, your parents are like, guys, come on. Like, please try to do this. And then they're like, it's okay. And you're like, I love you. Thank you. Like, like, and I think that's why we're so like drawn to Christ, where I am, is because, you know, I'm constantly breaking the rules, but the reason I try is because I know that like, if I do mess up, he's going to be like, you're good, bro. You got this, you know, mm-hmm. like keep going, but like keep trying to do this, sure. you know,
yeah.
there's just this balance. That's super cool.
It is. I mean, this is actually, as much as we talk about this being part of depression, this is how depression actually applies to real life scenarios for everyone. In that trying to assess yourself on a depressed level and trying to be like, okay, where is God looking at me now? Mm-hmm. Is just, it is a small picture of what we all do with God in our own minds in general, regardless of whether we're at.
Right.
In that we realize there is this expectation that he has for all of us in general. And we often look at our society in a way that it is judged by those expectations, but then you have unique individuals where clearly some of the things don't apply exactly how we're applying them.
Right. And it's funny that you say that, because we talk about like, you know, misjudging people based on, you know, their unique experience. Funny thing is we do that to ourselves all the time.
Yes.
Right. Like, just an example that we talked about yesterday is like, you know, I wake up, I'm ultra depressed, go to the gym, sit in my car. And then I'm like, I can't do this. I can't do this. I'm like, well, I have to, because I know I have to like try my best and whatever to receive, you know, strength from Christ and his grace and all this stuff, go home, take a 4-hour nap, you know, wake up. I'm like, I'm a loser.
Yeah.
Failure. And the hard part is, you could say, oh, well, you know, if I'm talking to myself, okay, Tommy, you know, you didn't do what you needed to do in order to receive that strength. So you know, tough. You're not really going to make a lot of progress. Or I can go on the other side and say, okay, Tommy, you know, you're feeling depressed. Give yourself a break. But then you're like, well, I can't do that either, because then I'm not going to progress either. Right. You know, so there's this
tension.
There's this tension, because in my head, I'm like, well, how much do I give myself? How do I know how much to like hold myself accountable? It's this accountability and mercy that is kind of like this torturous. And the truth is, it's somewhere there in the middle, but how do we know where it is?
Yeah.
And we don't.
You don't.
And that's the problem. That's where we just have to trust God. And somehow you mentioned, like, we don't have to make the calculation of like, what was that? You know, I forgot what you said, but like, if you go back to the Apple analogy, mm-hmm. we don't have to figure out, well, was that kid getting 200 units or 100 unit? And based on that, how do I judge him? Correct. Or how do I, we don't have to do that.
Yeah. We don't. And this is the weird thing, is we actually, the way we think of God, we actually consider that he is doing that all the time. That right. he is actually making all those calculations, and that's how he's judging us. And so right. we're kind of like handing it over to him and saying, okay, I'm doing the best I can with the information that I've given. But I know that you've got the ultimate calculator there, and you're going to figure this out. And I just hope that whatever I'm being dealt with here.
Right. And that goes back to what we said in the first thing. And I forgot, somehow we came to this conclusion, and I don't know who said it. It was probably you, but, like, we look at God and he's making the calculation to see if we're worthy or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we kind of talked about it, and we're like, well, is that really how it is? And I think what we said is, like, he's not calculating to see if we make it. He's calculating, like, how we're going to make it.
Yeah.
And that's where we go back to, like, you don't know what the experience is for, you know? Like, maybe you being depressed has more value in you making it than you being happy. And maybe at certain times it has more value for you. So... Sorry, I'm going off on a total tangent there, but
no, this
I
is
just
perfect.
Think it's super interesting.
Well, you yesterday had stated, as we were talking about these types of things, given if you're going through life and you see yourself getting hit by things that you're not intending to, that are knocking you down, let's see, how do we know you're on the right path, or how do you know that God's giving you something negative, that you're earning something negative by what you're doing with your behavior, and or if God is actually throwing something at you to learn by.
Right.
Which is a really tough thought process. If you're just thinking like, righteousness begets happiness, which we know is a good term, but doesn't always apply. There's a lot more to it. And so it makes it hard to be able to think like, okay, why did God make me so depressed today so that I am having this issue? Mm-hmm. Is this because I've done something wrong in the past, or is this, he actually is giving me something to learn how to fight that looks like I've been bad?
Mm-hmm. No, totally. And that's,
I mean, if you're God, that's a legit reason to be able to give somebody something bad. I need you to grow and learn, but it's going to make it look like you're a bad person.
Right.
Socially.
Right. You know, and even as I think about that, I don't really know the answer. There's some part of it that's like just accepting that you just don't know.
Right.
And the only thing you can do is really come to Christ, right? As much as you can. And there's this scripture, I forget where it is, it's somewhere in 2 Nephi, but it talks about like praying that what you go through can be for your good. And I read that, and I just don't have the scripture, but basically there was a day where I was just totally depressed, and you know, that was actually the same day that mm-hmm. I slept in. Yeah. I didn't do anything. I didn't do my morning routine, didn't study. Well, I went to work and I was just miserable. I was so, so miserable. And so I was trying to figure out, well, is this because I didn't do my stuff? Because I know, you know, when you don't do stuff, you're not going to feel as good or whatever. Is God expecting me to do that? Did he want me to do that? Did he want me to push, or is he okay with this? And I kind of had that scripture come to mind randomly. And so that's what I did. I just prayed and I said, hey, God, like, regardless of my actions, of how I do, like, good or bad, if I'm doing good or bad, if I'm doing bad, can this be for my good? Because I learned something. And if I'm doing good, can I be strong, you know? And so it was kind of this throw up my hands, but just pray that somehow this is good. Somehow you know what you're doing, and it's not because I'm an evil person.
Right. That's got to be like, That is the ultimate thought process, that no matter what situation you're in, you're looking at it and you're being like, okay, as much as I realize, for somebody who's very cynical and negative as I am, this is a strange statement, but like, to be like, okay, whatever this is, I mean, I could have 10 needles poked into my eye and being like, awesome, how do I learn from this? Right? This isn't a bad scenario. This is a good scenario because I've never been here before and I got to figure this out.
Yeah. I mean, like in a very extreme way, that's like the truth of it. I mean, really, like if we think about, okay, you know, I'm sure there were some of us in heaven, probably me, that was like, oh, give me it all, dude. Like I'll be Christ. Like I got this, like I'll do whatever I have, you know, like I'll go through all the suffering. Whatever gives me the most growth. Which is like stupid to say, but
I mean, Christ said it.
Right. I know, but he's yeah.
How did he get there?
Right. Eventually. Right. But, yes. But I think like when you think about it, if God doesn't, you know, in the scriptures it says God doesn't give you anything you can't handle, or we know that somehow. And shouldn't we all just be praying for
to bring it on.
Right. Bring it on. Come on. More. Yeah. And obviously we don't do that. And I don't think that we should.
I think it is good to be aware of that so that when things do happen, there should be an awareness of like, almost like, okay, I agree to this and that I want to be like Jesus.
Right.
And this is what it takes.
Right. And that's terrifying, but
it is,
but at the same time, but
also strengthening.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that just is what we talked about, is like just really starting to understand why.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
The whole gym thing. Like we understand. For your good.
Yes.
That's why it's less painful. Not because it's actually less painful.
Yes, because you're trying to accomplish your goal. Man, I love how you talked about just being in a scenario and just trying to look at it positively. That's serious. No, trying to look at it as an educational. There is no situation that you can't be in that isn't educational.
Well, you know, and I think that's so true. But on even like a broader, like even a more, I don't know how to say this. Like there's sometimes, I think that's my problem, is I say, okay, I'm struggling and what do I need to learn from this? I think there's times where we just go through experiences and we don't even know what we're learning, but we are, you know, there's something there. Uh-huh. Like, and I think that's where we just have to really trust experience. Itself. Like we have, I mean, a few years ago, I was absolutely a mess, total mess. Couldn't keep a job. I couldn't function. And, you know, then I had my come to Christ moment. I start coming to Christ and whatever. And, every day I'm obsessing, like, what do I need to learn? What do I need to know? And then you look back 2 years and you're like, I'm a lot farther. And someone asks you how, and you're like, I have no idea. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it happened.
Yes.
But it happened. And so I think there is some sort of sense that it's like, I understand this is an educational experience, but I don't necessarily need to know how.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's for someone that has incredible anxiety like me, and that can drive them to.
Yes. I mean, the gift of the whole thing is that, like, I'm just trying to imagine what the difference is. The difference between, there's clearly a time difference between where you were at then and now.
Yeah.
There is some component of just not giving up,
mm-hmm.
right? Of just like, there is value here and there is tension to be perfect. There is tension to just say, hey, I'm giving up, right? And in some way, you are always sitting within a livable point that gives you information.
Right.
But that's, I mean, because the easiest one would be like, I just don't want to exist anymore. I'm done.
Right.
But there's a, and I think this is actually why Tommy is the way you, sorry, third person, why you are the way that you are, and why actually people love listening to your podcast is because of the fighter. And I think this is actually a pretty common theme that goes along with people who have mental or emotional disorders, in that there is this person within them that is just this warrior,
mm-hmm.
that over their life experience just learns this ability to drive through the hardest times. Mm-hmm. Where if all things are equal, if we're talking about brain chemistry all being equal between all these individuals, and the only difference is like their will to be able to drive off of their life experience, is a person like you that I want to go into war with because of your ability to just be like, to accept the suck. It's actually a war term, to just embrace the suck, because you can, and you've proven that you can.
Yes. You must not spend enough time with me, but yes, you're right. You're right. There is some sort of, I would agree, but that does not mean my mindset's always like
correct
positive.
No, it's right? not.
But yeah. But I'm here.
Actually, and if I'm going into war, I don't want the guy that's positive.
Right, that's probably true.
Right, I want the realist.
Right,
I want the person who is actually going to be like, okay, let's assess the situation exactly how it is.
Right,
maybe use some creativity, but I need somebody who's got some real grit.
Right,
to be able to bear through this.
Right,
who here has grit? About is it that guy that just loves to play video games all day long? or I shouldn't say that because
look yeah. at Todd projecting his judgment. No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
I'm just kidding.
Yes, that's so true. Actually, that was me back in the anyway.
Yeah, that's all of us, and yes. We're like, yeah.
My staff's laughing real hard right now. And that
you know, you know, Todd has an Xbox set up in his like back office that he just. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it's just computer puzzles that I do. That's funny. It's not somebody who needs constant, you don't want somebody going to war with you who needs positive affirmation the entire time.
That's true.
And Christ definitely was not that individual.
Mm-hmm.
He was, I mean, for all intents and purposes, he is a rebel. He is a renegade. He is going against the system.
Right.
He is not receiving praise.
Right.
And in fact, when people try and... when people of power come in and try and tell him or make him feel bad, he shoves it right back in their face. You vipers, you whited sepulchers.
Right.
He has the courage within himself to be like, I know who I am.
Right.
And I know what I'm doing is good.
Right. You're not going to try to tell me that.
Yes.
That I'm some like, yeah, that's cool.
So, I mean, not to justify like being depressed or being negative all the time, but realistically there is a value there that actually is Christ-like, mm-hmm. that I think is underappreciated.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, the fact that you do the podcast that you're doing is that fighter. Because you see that, you think about that individual who tried to go to the gym that one day and then came back and was just depressed. And then seeing that same individual here having these conversations with me, that is somebody who has fought a war over that time frame.
You too.
Yeah. And it's hard to then explain that to somebody who's not had that experience as mm-hmm. to like what that war is like.
Right. And it's hard to, you know, I mean, it's hard for both of us to like sit here and be like, yeah, we've gone through something really hard. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? Like there's some sort of, it makes me uncomfortable. It makes you uncomfortable to talk about the podcast in some senses and say your story, but it's true. Right. You know, there's some sort of where I listened to a podcast and there was this guy that was going, he had depression and he was just like, so open. He's like, yeah, it's the hardest thing ever. Like he was like straight up and he didn't like sugarcoat it. And mm-hmm. I was like, that's cool. You know?
Yes.
Cause it is, it sucks. It yes. really sucks. But yeah.
And the difficulty of doing
I appreciate you saying that though.
Yeah. I mean, I only do that because it makes me feel better. Cause I'm like,
you're like, me too.
look at how I know this kid and I've helped him a little bit. And then it makes me feel good that like my suck has contributed to his warrior.
Well, that's one way of saying it. Right? Or you just helped me.
And here's another aspect of the personality that is the, the depressed person or the neuroticist, where when they get praise, we often will be like, eh, well, there's this part.
Right. There's almost like this guilt, like, oh, like they haven't seen the other part. Like, yeah. Oh, this is my best self. Like mm-hmm. this, which is true. But that doesn't, I guess that doesn't totally take away from the good, right?
Correct. It's
or maybe it plays into why you're good.
Or it may be a gift for somebody to be able to see somebody doing that and being like, oh, I get where this person is in their brain. And I know the value of this person trying to deny that there's some goodness within them or trying to make excuses for the goodness in them.
Right.
Knowing that basically what you're doing to me is you're showing me you're humble. And you don't want to say that. Because if you were to say that, right?
You're right, God, I am humble. Right?
But there's a certain sense where you're like, I can't tell you how awesome I am because then I look like a jerk.
I don't know that I think that, but I think that about you.
So. See?
So, yeah. Right?
And then I would then chime in with just basically the same rebuttal that you would have to me.
Right.
Because there's a similar thought process that goes along with people who are high in neuroticism, negative thinking, that actually plays out. And you can see that. I mean, watch this now. When you go out and you actually have conversations with people, you're able to see people do this kind of, thanks, but
yeah,
really uncomfortable with praise.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually see there's certain traits of humility that go along with that, that other people who would just accept the praise don't have.
Right. Hmm. Interesting. I forgot where that came from. What were we talking about?
I don't even know. Right. This is how it goes though. We're like just totally tangent off.
Okay, well, I have something real quick. This is so random, but I just totally forgot where we're coming from, so I don't really know where to go now.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
But I wrote this down. And this is because I feel like I get a lot of parents that reach out, and I never know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
But something that's interesting to me, and I think that you've done, and I'm curious your perspective on, is like, how would you say like vulnerability like plays into your parenting, and how do you feel like that's helpful for your kids?
So vulnerability, big word. Like how do you mean it specifically, just in a general way?
I mean it in the sense that like you're real about what you're going through, and sometimes you are willingly portray yourself as helpless to your children, or not, like you don't have it figured out.
Yeah. I would say again, it's a hybrid. This will be awesome when my kids listen to this, because now they'll be like, all right, which part of my dad is actually...
They're going to like try to manipulate the situation. Yes.
There is some serious value in letting your kids know that you're broken. When I look back at the 2 years where I did have treatment-resistant depression, to have my kids see me there brought us closer together in a way that we could not have achieved any other way. And it allowed me to then have frank conversations with them about darker things that they wouldn't feel comfortable about until much, much older.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me to sit and, I mean, at this stage, I've got a 9-year-old and I've got a 16-year-old. You reverse that like 3 years. I've got a 6-year-old and a 12-year-old. And we're talking about suicide. And it's a real discussion. To the point where they are then looking for certain cues to be able to help me not feel that way as much. Mm. For a 6-year-old to be able to do that, and realistically, it was actually my 6-year-old who was the most, and this is more his personality, just kind of a loving personality anyway, he was the most adept at doing that.
That's incredible.
Right? So there... but obviously the hybrid being that there's certain situations where you're not going to show your kids like how ugly things are so that they don't worry unnecessarily.
Right.
Right.
And that's why you wouldn't be vulnerable.
Correct. So, but realistically there, as far as my own experience, there's not been many situations where my wife and I have not felt like we couldn't talk with our kids about dark things. I could see. We've been fortunate in that, like, for example, financially, that hasn't been an issue for us, but I can see how financial stress told unnecessarily to children could cause problems. So it's,
yeah.
There are scenarios where it definitely, you definitely pick and choose, like, mm-hmm. Okay, how am I going to explain this here? Or if somebody else is having an experience, a family member, a loved one who's outside of our family that's having an experience that is personal to them that they don't want to have shared, that our kids are somewhat aware that there's a difference to. There definitely are scenarios there where like, You just gotta.
Right. Yeah. I think it's a powerful thing as a parent to be vulnerable in some senses. 100%. It's a balance. I think all these things are. But I guess something that happened recently, was I feel like, well, I guess I'll just go back. When I was in high school, I ended up getting super, like having this really tough relationship with my parents where, you know, there's anger and hatred and, you know, I end up getting sent to a mental hospital, super traumatic. And yeah, I just like, when I got out of that hospital, like there was just this like burning resentment toward my parents, like, and God. And I was just so angry. And it's weird because I was like, a few years after, I was like, okay, yeah, I've like totally forgiven my parents. But there would be certain moments where like something would happen and I would just get like enraged. Like I would just start feeling this like really weird. And I realized like it wasn't totally gone. And so it was hard, but something that happened, maybe a few months ago, maybe longer, as I was talking to my mom and she started explaining like some of the ways that she felt when I was going through it. And she was like, I would get on my knees every night and I would just like sob because I had no idea what to do. And it's funny because like, I never saw that.
Yes.
Like I always just saw this mom that was like, it seemed to me like a dictator, like just wanted to make sure like that I would do what she wanted. And when I didn't, she would get frustrated and that's how I viewed it. And so from my understanding, like I thought my parents have it totally figured out. So if my parents are making me feel insecure, angry, like I suck, then they're doing it on purpose. Like that's how I viewed it from my mind is like, my parents have it totally figured out.
This is intentional.
It has to be intentional. Because they're just so competent. Right.
Yeah.
And I think like it was super emotional for me and my mom, because when she started talking about it, I just got like super emotional. I was like, I never knew that. And I think that had I known that more, that my parents like felt so hopeless. I mean, there was maybe times where I saw it, but had I known that they were just like, we have no idea what to do. And not to the point where I'm like going back to your earlier point, not to the point where I'm like, oh, all is lost. But had I known and my parents been a little more vulnerable, cause I think they thought, oh, we shouldn't be vulnerable. But had I known that, I think it would have really healed our relationship.
So you're dealing with, that situation with two then, related but separate problems, and that you've got your own emotional difficulties, which are creating then a relationship problem with the secondary condition, where relationship problems be able to communicate accurately with your parents. And that's, you've got those two problems, one that you're dealing just with yourself, and then one where you're looking at your parents and you're seeing something that actually is not occurring.
Right. And I think what you said about like, you know, I'm incredibly emotionally immature, so I'm not going to come to my parents and be like, hey, can I talk to you about how I really feel? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
But if my parents had come to me and said, hey, Tommy, like, this is what we're really struggling with. We don't know, because we understand that you're not a bad kid. We love you so much, but we're just struggling. Then I would have opened up more. And I'm not saying that this is like a fix all for sure. And I'm not trying to tell anyone how to parent.
Yeah.
But I do think that like a lot of parents may assume that the best thing to do is like show no weakness.
Yeah.
Show no weakness, because then my kids will manipulate me or what. And I think it's the other way around a lot of times. And I think that's what you've done really well.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say that I've done it really well.
There you go.
All right.
There you go.
Yeah, there it is. Okay. So, I'll give a for example here, which puts me in a light of just like bad dad.
Okay.
But, my oldest recently, we were, like myself, with my own siblings, my kids have a tendency really to just nip at each other. Just, hey, you've done this wrong. You've done this wrong. You can't do this right. You can't do this right. And it had gone to a point one day where, it was just overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I'm yelling at the oldest. My wife's yelling at the oldest, and we're just like, just stop, stop it. And to a point where like, I'm physically close to him.
Yeah.
And I kind of elbow him. I'm like, just stop. And it catches him right in the diaphragm, and he drops to the ground. And now I'm going to get reported for like child abuse. Right. But that at that moment, I was like this, equating that to like, I know exactly what's right and I'm forcing it upon you. Mm-hmm. And this, again, this is me just being vulnerable. And as far as a dad goes, like I felt horrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a part of me that was like, I've got to do this. And my son has got to understand that he cannot be doing that to his siblings.
Right.
Especially in front of other people, which was kind of the scenario.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, I went for a walk and then I came back and just, it was a difficult scenario because my son does not want to talk with me at that point.
Right.
I mean, both of our emotions are so off of the communication level that the communication that can heal or the thing that can heal, start the healing process, neither one of us wants to do.
Right.
And so the way it had worked out, it had been an hour car ride and we were both in separate cars. And then once we got out of the cars, I went up to him and I said something to the effect, like, I have to tell you this. And he's like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. As a son, I would totally get that because I remember doing the exact same thing to my mom and
I've done
similar situations. And I said, I have to say this. This has to be said. I just put it out there. I said, I'm a bad dad. That was not right. And he, as mad as he was at that moment towards me, rightfully so, mm-hmm. he rolled his eyes and he's like, you're not a bad dad. Because he didn't equate it with that. He didn't want it to go that extreme.
Right.
Though he.
But he understood how you were really feeling.
Yes.
And he had some sort of compassion.
Right. So that it's, there is this appreciation that this is the awesomeness about life in general, that we're both broken. And that we're both trying to figure it out. And it's, and as much as it is okay to be angry at each other for a time, just to be able to get the emotions out, because that's good. There is some goodness to that. That's our bodies are created to actually burn off that anger in a way. But that on some level, from both sides, that we've got to come at it using our intelligence to be able to say, okay, it doesn't feel right to be able to say this right now, and it's not going to make it feel any better, but I'm broken. Mm-hmm. Talking about how broken we are is so healing. And maybe that's
healing. It is healing.
It is absolutely healing.
That's how my relationship was able to heal with my brother and my mom mm-hmm. and my dad. And I think, you know, that's exactly it. I had assumed that I was broken and my mom wasn't, and she was judging me. Mm-hmm. And then in that moment, you know, this emotional moment, I realized, no, I'm broken. My mom's broken and we're judging each other. And then in that moment, like, I'm like, we're uneven. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm like totally emotional because I'm like, I'm sorry what I put you through.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm sorry what I put you through.
Like, how much more clout does she have with you once she stated that?
Well, now, you know, now, like, I think back on that situation, I'm like, poor mom, mm-hmm. you know, it used to be poor me and jerk mom. And now I'm like, poor mom. Like, and it's just interesting what it can do to a relationship, vulnerability. And I think that parents, especially, but because I think you're right, like, they don't want to freak their kids out. They want their kids to think that they have everything under control.
Yes.
And to an extent, I think you have to.
Correct. There is a necessity to show a certain amount of order.
Right. But order without vulnerability will to your kids make you think that make them think that you're a robot and that you have everything figured out and that you're just trying to make their lives miserable.
Yeah. I mean, this is completely like another Jordan Peterson thing in that he's consistently talking about order and chaos.
Yeah, right.
And how there is this proper balance that you do want to have enough order to be stable, but you also want to be able to show an ability to handle a certain amount of chaos, because if you're only living in a world of order and then something gets out of whack, you can't handle it.
Right.
Right. And so and if you are portraying that to everybody else, that you are this just ordered thing, people who are living in chaos and handling chaos look at you like, oh, that person's untouchable.
Right. And unrelatable.
Yes. You can't teach me anything and because you're not perfect.
Right. And is that not why what makes Christ Christ is his perfect ability to balance order and chaos?
Yes.
Like, he's in this fallen world and he upholds these incredible principles perfectly, but he deals with these mortals that have whatever, and he's ultra compassionate and his ministry is perfect, but it's not, you know, like,
yes.
He has this perfect plan with these imperfect people. It's like he is, and that's what makes Christ Christ, is he can. And I think that's what a lot of people with emotional disorders have, is they have, you know, you look at like OCD, right?
Yes.
This incredible order that needs to be, even anxiety. Like, that's what it is for me, is like, I need to know why I'm going through something, if it's good or bad, and it loops through my mind constantly. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, even things that like, oh, my shoulder hurts. Like, what is it? I want to get a diagnosis. Like, it can consume my whole day. And that's just like this order. And then there's some people on the other side that are, you know, they can't keep their room a mess. They like thrive. They want to, you know, yeah. There's this, yes. So I think like, and black and white thinking, right? It's like the king of anxiety and depression is black and white thinking. It's like this inability to, we want to say, is God disappointed and I should have done more, or is he okay with it and he has full compassion for me? Well, you can't say that, you know, it's a balance of order and chaos. It's not one or the other. And I think that's where we all get in trouble.
Yes. Yeah. Trying to find like some magic bullet and forgetting that it is a process of effort to be able to just get through, to figure things out. It's not like, oh, here's your answer. It's, oh, figure it out yourself.
Right. And it's so funny that we do this. Like, when I first tried to start figuring out like anxiety and depression, I talked about it in my mental health talk, is like, I was looking for the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then, and it killed me. Like, it killed me, dude. Like,
over and over.
Just like over that. And over. Like, I.
It's like the multiple death.
Every time I feel better, I'm looking, okay, what is the answer? I literally have, like, in my old computer, like, what I wrote out as, like, the formula. Mm-hmm. Like, I would make formulas. Like, okay, do this. And then when all of a sudden you feel this way, feel that, do this. And then if you feel this way, do this. It's like, plans are good, but, like, that's, mm-hmm. like, too much order.
Mm-hmm.
You can't function. And so, it's just interesting. I just love the way you talked about that, the balance of the vulnerability. And
yeah, I will say this, that as far as God's concerned, I actually think that is one of his single most greatest defining features, is his vulnerability. And it's a weird kind of concept, in that he's vulnerable enough to be able to put everything on the line for us. But at the same time, then he becomes stronger than anything. There's nothing that you could, there's no hostage situation that you could hold God with. As much as he loves us, and as much as we mean everything to him, and as much as he is willing to die for us, there's no point where you're like, okay, that somebody could come up to God and say, okay, we're going to take this away from you. I mean, he'd be like, I don't care. Like, he is the absolute, by definition, he would be the absolute minimalist. He needs nothing. He needs nothing. And that's why he has such a great gift, to be able to control everything, because he needs none of it.
Right. And you look at like what we look at, oh, why would God let this happen? It's like, you don't think it's painful for him?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, almost like the pain. Yes. So then by taking it individually, the vulnerability where God then looks at us and he's like, where we think to ourselves, he's so disappointed in me and he's done all of this for me and I'm just disappointing him over and over and over again. And there's truth to that, right? I mean, if you think about it on a certain level, that's true. I disappoint him every single day.
Right.
His willingness to put himself out there and then just watch me just take advantage of that whole thing is godlike. But it's at the same time, he does have this character where he's like, I'm perfect because I don't need it. There's this.
Yeah. No, I know what you're talking about.
There's this weird, you are so worth it to me that I will do everything. And by doing everything, nothing is important.
And like, as painful as it is for me to watch you suffer, I have such a clear perspective on this that I'll torture you if I have to.
Yes.
Like in some sense that like you would be grateful I did.
Yes.
And it, like,
now we're getting to the dark stuff.
And that's terrible. But like, if you thought, hey, Todd, if I said, hey, Todd, look, will you torture me for 10 minutes if I could be happy for the rest of my life?
Mm-hmm.
Or don't torture me for 10 minutes. And then when I'm done with that 10 minutes, I have to live in an endless state of misery.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to torture the heck out of me.
Yeah.
Like you just would. You would just be like, I'm sorry, but like,
yeah,
you see it clearly. And I think that's where we go wrong is like, we just assume that like, oh, and God, like he's not doing anything that isn't helping us achieve our goal. Like there's no,
yeah.
Okay. Like there's no like, okay, you're going to go through this and then you messed up. So I'm going to like, just throw an extra, like, just cause out of spite, cause you know, you're kind of annoying right now.
Because, it's all productive.
Right. Because it is all productive. Because even if you look at like not being blessed because you're not keeping the commandments, like what is that trying to do?
Mm-hmm.
Get you back and keep the commandments. Yeah, like it's not
like, yeah,
it's not out of spite.
It's a natural consequence that then puts you back onto the path to be able to learn the correct principles. Right.
And you talked about this yesterday, and this is, we're coming up on an hour, so we should probably close it. But you talked about like playing, like God uses the natural man,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Like explain that. You can't.
Man, I mean, my brain's firing off on so many things. I'm going to see if I can relate this because I really liked how you used the assessment of torture for a benefit, right? Which seems so strange, but as if God could put torture on you and that is going to be for your benefit. The funny thing is that like, I no longer look at it when I oftentimes would look at things like torture for myself and be like, why is this happening to me? The only time it actually ever brought value to me wasn't anything that I would get. The torture was actually only became valuable when I saw how it actually benefited somebody else. And this is actually how torture works. You're totally willing to get tortured. Usually people are tortured in wartime situations for information. But if somebody has something so strong that they want to protect, they will take ultimate torture for it because that thing is more important to them than the pain that they're experiencing.
And then indirectly, like you talk about, well, the torture doesn't benefit me until it helps someone else. Then you get this joy, right?
Yeah. And you're like, it's totally worth it.
And so it does. Yeah. And so, but it's weird how we think torture immediately benefits me. It's like, mm-hmm. no, torture benefits me, which benefits you. And then it benefits me.
Sure.
Which is kind of,
yes.
We don't look at it like it's not super. And that's just another example of God's like,
it's counterintuitive.
Right. Everything is like, that's how I feel about everything.
And that actually is a good example of the natural man. And the natural man, obviously at the very get go, if he's completely invested in himself, completely for his own nature, which is by definition what the natural man is, just self-preservation. That person would avoid that type of torture at all costs.
Right.
There would be nothing outside of that individual that they would be willing to take torture for. And so in that sense, in this situation, that's the natural man then becomes an enemy to anything that then you could find benefit for outside of yourself. Does that make sense? So if you are being tortured and you're completely based on your natural man, you will give up everything so that you're not tortured anymore, mm-hmm. just so that you experience some positive have the positive experience. A person who has completely placed off the natural man, or not until a person then puts off that natural man and finds something of more value outside of himself, will then that person get to the point where, like, I'm willing to be tortured.
Right. And it's funny because it's, in some senses, that's selfish, but it's just a greater understanding.
Yes.
Right? Like, Jordan Peterson talks about this. He's like, if you were really intelligent and you were selfish as heck, the smartest thing you could do is, if you were really intelligent and you were selfish, is be unselfish, because that will end up reaping the biggest rewards. People will like you. You'll have better relationships. You'll have better money. You'll be better in business. All these things, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's really the selfish thing to do, mm-hmm. if you're smart and if you have discipline. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it is. That's what the gospel is. You think, oh, it's this incredible sacrifice. And it may look like that if you're not looking into the future. But, like, you can't tell me that the gospel hasn't blessed my life. And I'm not talking about, like, oh, I feel the spirit more. I'm talking about, like, no, like...
like, real life.
I can have better relationships. I am 100% more confident in my ability to eventually make money and provide for a family, which is what I want. Like, I'll probably have nicer things. Like, I think that's where kids get so wrong, like, get it so wrong, is they're like, oh, so I have to make all these sacrifices and I get nothing. And it's just not true.
Yes. The difficulty is, and this is fascinating, we're coming full circle here, because you had talked about time before. Mm-hmm. The difficulty is time.
And perspective.
Time, perspective, and effort. Right. So we have these desires, or a child has these desires, and they want just immediate gratification. And that's often what it's, depression often is that, like, when is this going to be over?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When can this be over? And in fact, I mean, what makes the suffering so intense is that it is just ongoing. It is long suffering. Because realistically, if you suffer for 5 seconds, that's not, but yeah, you could give me like the maximum amount of suffering for 5 seconds.
Yeah. You could shoot me in the face for 5 seconds. Like, if it disappears after that, I mean, it's like, it would be painful as heck, but
what did you learn from that? Come on. Seriously. right. You learned nothing. But the things that you learned through, as far as suffering goes, require time. Mm-hmm. The more time, the better.
Right.
Because the more time shows your grit to be able to bear through it.
It's character building.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And even if you don't necessarily know how, like, even if for some reason you can't see, like, a lot of times I come out of depression, I'm like, did I learn anything from that? I go to my journal. I'm like, what did I learn? I'm like, I have no idea. But you still get the sense that, like, that somehow made me better.
Yes.
I don't know really how.
Well, it is. I mean, it almost to the effect that, okay, I basically just bought myself another several units of time then to get to the point where the epiphany comes at, like, time unit 100, and I've just bought time unit 45.
Right. And that's exactly what I was talking about.
But I'm specifically looking at that specific unit from 44 to 45, and I see no value in 44 to 45.
That's what I was talking about with the spaceship thing you were talking about yesterday. You know what I'm talking about? With the mission, right?
Yes.
And you're like, he goes through all these, like, awful things. And, like, had he looked at it right up until the point of the mission, he's like, where's the value?
Yes.
People probably don't even know what we're talking about, but maybe it's okay. Who cares? Yeah, sorry, who guys. Cares? Tough.
Yeah. Neil Armstrong, First Man. It's a good show.
Yeah. Basically, I'll just recap it. Basically, we talked about how he went through, like, trial after trial after trial, and there was no, like, benefit in between the trials. Like, he had all these terrible things happen to him, and you think, oh man, this guy's life just sucks. But then he ends up doing something incredible by going to the moon. And he has this incredible ability to just with endure, like, stress and all these different things. And I think I look at that in my life. When Todd said that to me, I was like, well, that's really interesting, because sometimes I feel like, oh, my life sucks. And it's like, look at it. And this is not true, because I've already started seeing the benefits, but maybe I look till I'm 30 and I'm going, where's the benefit here? Mm-hmm. And maybe the benefit's 40, you know, maybe it comes you know, it's all worth it then. Yeah.
You don't see the moon for the hardship at 20 years old.
Right.
That comes 25 years later.
Yeah. That was good stuff. You have anything else you want to add?
I think we're good.
Yeah.
Man, awesome.
Dang, we just pumped out 2 hours of content.
Unbelievable for depressed people.
I know, right? I feel like this is the only time I'm not depressed.
That's good.
All right. Thanks, man. Okay. Bye.